Hey, it's Daryl C. Murphy, and I just want to talk to you real quick. The Common is produced at WBUR in Boston. We're public media. We don't have paywalls, which means we don't ask you to pay to see our work. We say, here's some powerful stories for free. And then, if some of those stories you read or listen to are important to you, and you talk about it with your friends and family, and you even see the world a little differently, then we ask you to support it, because we want to continue making work that is meaningful to you. And right now, I want to let you know what's happening at WBUR. Our radio shows, our podcasts are getting some of the biggest audiences we've ever had. Our journalism is winning awards, reaching new and more diverse audiences. And you are a big part of that. Our journalism has never been stronger, but the business has never been harder. We've had a big loss of sponsorship dollars, like a lot of media companies have in recent years. But one thing we've always been pretty good at is getting support from our listeners to make the things they love. So we're asking right now, in a crucial moment for WBUR, can you help us get through this by joining other listeners in supporting WBUR? We need your help to keep making the podcast you're listening to right now, along with everything else that comes from WBUR. Your help would mean a lot to me and to all of my colleagues. So please, head to our website, WBUR.org. Thanks.
WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. Today, we bring you the start of a three-part discussion about cannabis in Massachusetts. It's become a multi-billion dollar industry that helps fuel the state's economy and brings in millions upon millions of dollars in tax revenue, while also providing opportunities to address racial equity. At the same time, cannabis is pretty heavily regulated, and despite its popularity, the negative stigma around it still lingers. So we want to talk about what this all looks like in 2023. And we're going to kick things off today with freelance cannabis and drug policy journalist Dan Adams. He's going to fill us in on where things are with cannabis as far as business and policy. So I want to start with an article you wrote for the Boston Globe earlier this year about a prediction that said that 2023 is going to be a turbulent year for the cannabis industry due to a lot of wholesale suppliers and competition. And so I want to kick us off by asking you, do you see that coming to pass?
Yeah, I think unfortunately for members of the industry, that prediction was pretty on point. Mm-hmm. The price shakeout that we've seen over the last 18 months or so continues pretty much unabated, which is great news for consumers. You know, it used to be that buying an 8 ounce of marijuana flower would run you $60, $65, even $70. Now those prices are down closer to $20, $30. But that's turning out to be really bad news for businesses in this state. Their profit margins already weren't very high, and now they're really razor thin or even negative. We're starting to see some of these companies go out of business.
So it's okay to say that, you know, right now it looks like the market is kind of crashing.
Yeah, I don't think that's an overstatement. The reduction in prices has really, really been dramatic. It's important to remember, too, that the reality has always been that because the drug remains illegal under federal law, the way that taxes are calculated is very harsh for these businesses. They're not allowed to write off any of the normal business expenses that another ordinary retailer could. They had big loans. These very onerous regulations required them to spend a lot of money up front to build compliant facilities that had all the required security cameras and all the different doors and things like that. And even worse, these companies aren't allowed to declare bankruptcy, also because of federal prohibition. The only option for them is to go into sort of a state-managed receivership. So that really puts these companies in a corner.
What does this do for equity in the cannabis industry?
That's a really good and really difficult question, Daryl. I have to say, it feels like a broken promise. That's really maybe the best way that I can answer this. So few applicants have successfully made it out of the licensing pipeline to run a business. And now the market that's waiting for them at the end of that licensing pipeline is so incredibly competitive. It's so harsh. It used to be the feeling was, if you get a license, you've made it. You're good. Mm-hmm. You're going to make your money. You're going to create that intergenerational wealth, put it back into those communities that were disproportionately policed over cannabis. I don't know how plausible that is anymore. Certainly not arguing against equity here, but in terms of how much profit is waiting for folks when they are able to open for business, are they going to be able to compete against these large interstate companies that are, you know, driving costs down really aggressively? And mm-hmm. and then you look at the prospect of, you know, federal legalization and the advent of interstate trade. I mean, if it's bad now, just wait until we're competing against $15, $10 eighths from Oregon that were grown outdoors with no artificial lights. I mean, the West Coast weed is way cheaper. So the state is doing a lot right now to try to help equity applicants. They passed this law last year. There's a new fund to help them get off the ground. There's new rules saying that municipalities have to incorporate equity into their approval process for businesses at that local level. And that's all good. The state and the localities should be doing all that, but I'm worried it's too little too late.
Mm. Where are things at the federal level regarding cannabis? Is there any progress being made towards full federal legalization? And how is that affecting us in Massachusetts?
Yeah, this conversation has been going on for a long time, and I don't really see very substantial reform getting passed this session. Part of the issue is there's this perpetual conflict even within the pro-marijuana camp, where some folks favor, let's take what we can get. Let's do a more limited reform where we just deal with the banking issues. Let's stop this nonsense of having dispensaries keeping their cash in a shoebox under the bed mm-hmm. and just leave it at that for now. Other folks who are pro-marijuana feel very strongly that we have to pass comprehensive reform, that Congress is unlikely to take two bites at this issue, and that if you only reform the banking without also addressing equity, interstate trade, the medical use of the drug, all these other sticky issues, if you don't deal with all of that up front, it's going to be left unresolved. And then we'll end up with a situation where the money is flowing more freely. That benefits the entrenched people who, you know, frankly, already have access, better access to capital than like a smaller equity applicant might. And then that would just sort of make the situation worse. So there's those two camps who are always sort of fighting over what do we do in Congress. But Congress itself doesn't seem to have much inclination, at least that I can see, to be passing anything in the near future.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
And we're back. I want to bring it back to Massachusetts and kind of check in on a couple policy issues with you. One, where do things stand with cannabis cafes? How long until I can finally, you know, smoke a joint in a lounge in Boston or something?
I'm waiting for the same thing, Daryl. I'll meet you there when they open. So last year in 2022, then Governor Charlie Baker signed a law that, among other things, fixed this mechanism for municipalities to opt in to hosting these so-called social consumption facilities or cannabis lounges. The Cannabis Control Commission, the state regulatory agency that oversees the industry here, they're still working on the nitty-gritty language of implementing that, essentially. So we expect to have those rules come out later this year. That said, there are some pretty serious concerns about the economic viability of these businesses, and there's going to be some painful conversations at the municipal level where folks are really worried about secondhand smoke exposure for the staff, the odor drifting towards neighbors, things like that. So all of that stuff remains to be sorted out. So I would not be holding my breath, unfortunately, although I always have to point out that, you know, our neighbor in New York has done something much more sensible, which is they allow cannabis to be consumed anywhere that cigarettes can be consumed, including in public. You know, Massachusetts, we remain in this weird conundrum where we essentially have liquor stores but no bars, right, for when it comes to cannabis. You can get a $100 ticket for smoking weed in public.
Mm-hmm. And what about folks getting cannabis-related convictions expunged? How's that going?
So that law that passed last year did make some limited changes to cannabis expungements. It made it slightly easier to obtain one. But, you know, I had reported in the past that the process for getting these old pot charges wiped off your record is just so onerous. You've got to basically track down all your old paperwork. You've got to, like, go to the police station in the town where you got arrested. You've got to go to the courthouse where the case was adjudicated. You've got to track down all this stuff yourself. Then you've got to fill out this big application and send it to the probation department and have them approve it. And then it goes to a judge who, until this law passed, judges had the ability to deny these petitions simply on the basis that it would be, quote, not in the best interests of justice. And they didn't have to justify it. They didn't have to, you know, give a written ruling explaining the reasons for the denial. I haven't seen new statistics about whether removing the ability of judges to have that kind of discretion has improved the situation and allowed more people to go through. So we've taken this population of folks who we've said out of one corner of our mouths, you're disenfranchised. You were unfairly targeted by these unfair laws. You never should have had this conviction. This drug never should have been illegal. Are bad. You can expunge it. But then we're also turning around and telling that exact same person, hey, we know you're disenfranchised and probably, you know, you're working multiple jobs, you're in a more tenuous economic situation because of this conviction that you've been dragging around your whole life, but it's your job to dig yourself out of the hole. You go find your paperwork, you go apply, you go argue with the judge about whether it should be expunged. So we've put the burden of, you know, removing this oppression on the oppressed people.
It seems like Massachusetts is making this effort to create an equitable cannabis industry. They want to address the past harms and all this stuff, but there's just so much bureaucracy and the industry seems so heavily regulated. I don't know, something just feels wrong. Does that make sense to you? Does it make sense that I feel that way?
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, sometimes I think it gets traced back to this feeling of, like, in this country, in politics, it seems that the worst thing that people think we could do is to give somebody something that they don't deserve. There's a lack of generosity in our politics. Not to make it too spiritual or philosophical on you here, but I think that attitude carries through to this equity situation in cannabis, where we need everybody to prove that they're the right kind of equity operator, and they need to jump through all these hoops. They need to have a small conviction, but not too bad of a conviction, right? And the financing piece, you know, the financing piece is really, really difficult because, again, by definition, these are communities that lack access to large amounts of capital. And yet the state to this day has not actually implemented anything to address that lack of capital. We just now are creating a fund to help equity applicants get their businesses off the ground. And now, in the meantime, the market has crashed, right? And I can't help but wonder, if we had been more aggressive about this at the beginning, we could be telling a different story. But we hesitated, we equivocated, and now, as we're finally coming around to realize the help that's actually needed to achieve this vision that state leaders articulated, it just hasn't added up to much.
So let's look towards the future. What are you watching for?
There's some good things coming this year, despite the other concerns. So one is the social consumption facilities, which we talked about. It's going to happen slowly, but that is coming. But the biggest and most significant changes, I think, will be happening at the local level. Cities and towns are now required to consider equity when they're choosing which applicants get approved at the local level. That's a really big change. Only a couple municipalities had any provisions about equity in their approval process before this. And also, there's going to be a crackdown on these so-called community impact fees, in which, you know, cities and towns were basically charging hundreds of thousands of dollars to every marijuana operator to supposedly offset their impact. Although if you ever asked them to enumerate those impacts, they would sort of scratch their heads and tell you to go away, because, you know, there really haven't been that many. And so I think there's going to be an end to the abuses under this new law around these fees. And that's going to make a big difference for operators. I'm looking for this fund for equity applicants to be implemented this year. Qualifications for receiving those haven't really been spelled out yet. But in an environment where you can't just go down to the bank and get a normal small business loan, that's going to make a big difference for folks in terms of building these very expensive facilities, meeting these very extensive regulations.
Man, Dan, thank you so much for coming through and talking to us about all of that, man. This has been very enlightening. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Daryl. Thanks for putting the spotlight on this.
That's freelance journalist covering cannabis and drug policy, Dan Adams. And that's part one of our three-part cannabis series. Tomorrow, we'll be talking about equity with Lori Lucien. She's a cannabis entrepreneur and attorney specializing in cannabis law. It's going to be a good one. Make sure you check it out. And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening to The Common. If you have any thoughts or feelings about cannabis and the current state of the business, the current state of equity, whatever it might be, we want to hear from you. Hit us up on Instagram at WBURTheCommon or send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. I'm Daryl C. Murphy, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.